Hour to go here with Joshua Warren. Fright Night tonight. Open lines next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll get to your calls when we come right back. Welcome back. George Norrie with you with Joshua P. Warren. Our final hour with Joshua. He's gracious enough to stay to take your calls for another hour. This project that you call the Mobius Mission Project, of course, capturing evidence, it's up and running now, Josh?
Thank you so much for bringing that up, George, because this is a really important project. It is not up and running yet. I think we're going to have it up and running sometime this summer. This is going to be the very first truly comprehensive effort to capture scientifically credible evidence, footage of ghosts and UFOs. And this is so ambitious, but it's so overdue. And I'll just tell you briefly about why that I decided to jump on board with this, because there are a lot of us who are going to be involved with it. For example, we've got Jason Halls and J.V. Johnson. We've got Dean Worsing, C. Eric Scott. I could keep naming names, but basically, when I first saw a ghost, this was 20 years ago, something like that, I photographed it, I touched it. There was another person there who also saw it from another angle and touched it. And yet still, I was frustrated because people wouldn't necessarily believe that there was such a thing as a ghost. I don't have a Ghostbuster trap that I can kick out there and suck it into so that I can put it in a jar in my museum. And I think that all of these different TV shows out there that are capturing stuff are not capturing things that stand up to the level of scrutiny we need. So basically, the Mobius mission is going to be all about finding extremely paranormal hotspots, and we're putting in sophisticated camera rigs in a circular fashion. These are going to be virtual reality cameras that are capturing many different perspectives. And by the way, all that's required for a 3D image is just two cameras looking at something from slightly different angles. We're going to have at least five or six cameras in a ring that are all focused inward on one hotspot. At the center of that hotspot, we're going to have an instrument pack. So that we'll have a whole separate section for control equipment as well. But basically what we want to get is a manifestation that can be videotaped from every single point of view and at the same time affect instrumentation. Everybody who has access to the scene is also going to volunteer to take a professional lie detector test so that there's no doubt about the honesty and integrity of how this was done. And I want to move past this question of whether or not ghosts and exotic UFOs even exist. We should be long past that. We should be onto the phase of what are they? They are there. And so I have actually a plea right now for your audience. If anybody listening to this show right now has a truly paranormal hotspot where full-bodied apparitions have already been captured on film, or where exotic UFOs have been captured on film on a regular basis, and you want to consider allowing us to use your property as a place to set up one of these rigs, please email me, go to joshuapwarren.com, let me know. And also, anybody who would like to get the first glimpse of the footage that we capture just needs to sign up for my free e-newsletter, because I'm going to be keeping people updated through that as well. But ultimately, George, I think that the only way we are going to get scientifically credible proof that these things exist is to have them captured in a controlled environment from every single angle with an instrument pack. And you know what, George? We are not only going to take lie detector tests, we are going to document ourselves as we set up the rigs to document the paranormal phenomenon. And if you can think of a better, more solid way to prove that an apparition is truly paranormal, I would love to hear it. And honestly, that's not a rhetorical question. I mean, George, can you think of anything more that we can do?
No, you're pretty efficient. You've got all the bases covered.
Unless you've got the Ghostbuster trap, you know, like I say, I'm happy to suck it into a trap.
Don't have it. Don't have it. Let's go to Louise in Louisville, Kentucky now. Hello, Louise. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question regarding iconoclasm, where culture destroys its own icons. In David Wilcox's book, Synchronicity, Chapter 20, he stated that Pope Leo III of Constantinople decreed that the icon of Jesus should be removed from the palace. Hello?
Yeah.
And the second one was the Muslim caliph in 639 decreed that the icon of Jesus should be removed from their royal coins. And this is the only two times I've heard of an icon of Jesus proving that he really did exist. I would like to know what Joshua P. Warren has to say about the iconoclasm.
Well, I don't know if you can, Josh.
Well, you know, what I can say is that every single thing, every concept that you can imagine, whether it is something as simple as I'm hungry and I would like a grilled cheese sandwich, or I want spiritual salvation, every single thing that you can imagine as a concept is actually produced by you as a specific, unique vibrational frequency. It is just as unique as your fingerprint or as your DNA. And when you release this frequency, you create whatever type of an impression or icon that you think represents that. So ultimately, yes, when you go into a culture that you want to destroy, obviously one of the things that you do is destroy their icons, their sigils, their symbols. I mean, how many times have you watched a documentary about World War II where they show that swastika exploding to bits because they set off, you know, the explosive behind it? It's very symbolic. On the other hand, you have the symbology of the Marines, you know, lifting the flag on Iwo Jima. Symbols are so important. They literally glue the world together. That's what money is. I mean, right now, if the zombie apocalypse happens, what is your money going to be worth in your wallet? You know, can you even eat that? Maybe. I guess if you're desperate enough, maybe you can eat it. But, you know, ultimately all these things do is symbolize and represent things. And so the power of a symbol is that it condenses something that is, it starts with a basic human view or need or some kind of thing that you're trying to attract and deal with in your life. And so it doesn't matter what religion or belief system or governmental system that you're dealing with, everything can be represented with these symbols and with these sigils. And you know what's funny is that we've now reached a point where we are so educated or potentially educated via the internet especially, that you can take just about any successful business out there, look at their logo, and you can actually find the connection between that business logo and one of these logos from sometimes thousands of years ago, or sigils, I should say, from thousands of years ago, meant to attract the type of business that they are attracting. And so it's no different than having the all-seeing eye and, you know, the pyramid on the dollar bill. It's a matter of understanding that these things that were once magical work so practically now in the real world that we even use them for business and for government and for branding. And so that is ultimately how we remember and how we condense a culture down.
David's in Dallas, Texas. Hi, David. Good morning. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, I believe it's fate that I called because, you know, I own a business and I did design my logo to include all these things that Joshua was talking about. And while, you know, he's talking about the pyramid and the dollar bill, that's a sigil that everybody pretty much has in the United States that works pretty well. Now, what I wanted to say about that was I find it kind of interesting, and this isn't confirmed, nor I don't think it can be confirmed, but the Masonic pyramid that's on the back of the dollar, as well as the United States seal, both of those, I guess it would be the circumference, is almost the exact circumference of the average human eyeball, and the distance between both of them is almost the exact distance between, I guess, an average face. So if you cut out those two circles and you held the dollar to your face, you know, and looked through the dollar as a binocular or something of that nature, I guess you can call them the wizards behind the curtain of the United States government, the people who really pull the strings back in the 30s or 20s or whenever the dollar bill was designed. They knew this. They wanted us to see the world through the eyes of money. And it's just something, you know, the dollar is a very powerful symbol. And as Joshua was saying, you know, an idea is the most powerful thing that we have. So
quick reaction to that, Josh.
You know, something that's very interesting about what you're saying, David, that I think is important to share with everybody is that, you know, whenever you talk about business and money, a lot of people automatically, they say, oh, well, this person is just trying to make money because he or she is talking about money. But the fact of the matter is money is actually a really interesting example of how we express what we value and appreciate within any culture. And what I can tell you is that one of the things that I do is I always carry around a piece of currency in my pocket from a foreign country. And the reason I do that is that I'm not even thinking about it, and I reach in my pocket and I pull it out from time to time, and it reminds me that this is just a symbol, because if I look at, say, a Mexican peso or whatever, that doesn't really mean anything to me in the same way that a quarter does. Or if I pull out some currency from Romania, it looks like Monopoly money to me. And this reminds me that money is actually a flow of energy, that money is actually about relationships. Money comes from one place, and that's other people. And so it reminds you that money is not something that is physical and tangible, unlike it was back in the days when we used to barter things. It's just a symbol, and the effectiveness of that symbol is really based upon the energy of relationships between different people who are trading. And that's one of the reasons that economics is actually a very mystical thing, because at the core of it all, there exists nothing really other than human trust. And that's why you can see the acceleration and the absolute decline of entire economies based upon how much trust a particular culture is given in a relationship.
Okay, let's take a few more calls, then the break. Let us go to Basil in Beaumont, Texas. Welcome to the program. Hi, Baz.
Yes, relating to the lady, you know, with the scratch off that, you know, that end up winning.
Right.
She's going to go to the casino and stuff. I mean, there's going to be a certain subset of people listening out there that's going to have a positive, you know, reaction. But then there's a lot that doesn't. There's also, like, you know, the guy that told everybody to wind up their clocks and stuff. I mean, you know, if I tell everybody that now, there's going to be people that, you know, their watch is going to start back. And, you know, and if you call out that you want those people to call in and let you know their experience, then they'll think that, you know, I have some special powers or something. But, you know, it's just chance, you know, because you can tell anybody out there to put a stick or two walnuts in a pocket and, you know, go to the casino. And if they win, then, you know, they'll sign credit to me, you know.
Sure. Sure. Well, sounds somewhat skeptical with Josh.
Well, yeah, and I absolutely understand that. And, you know, basically, okay, for one thing, I agree entirely with you, Basil. And I think that there are things out there which we cannot easily quantify and put into a controlled laboratory setting to test out, like music, for example, okay? There's no way that you can take a piece of music and figure out if it's going to go to number one on the Billboard chart or if it's going to be a flop unless you compare it to unique, subjective, individual human data. And so there is this phenomenon that is a real phenomenon of things that happen within the realm of the individual human experience, which are not just like taking, you know, atoms and seeing how they're going to collide and bounce around. And the funny thing is, if you look at quantum physics includes the individual human consciousness and the observer effect. And so basically the only way that we can take these different techniques, these different things that have a connection or a relationship to the individual human relationship and test it, is to put it out there and see what kind of feedback you get. And sometimes, you know, it'll be right and sometimes it'll be wrong. I mean, look at polling they do in politics. I mean, we saw in the election how off the polling was for the presidential election. It's similar to that. But what I say is that if you can give me a better way of how to do this, of how to test this type of phenomenon without totally ignoring it, I would love to hear it. I'm all ears. But for now, this is the best we can do. Throw this out there and say, hey, you go out, you test it, and give me feedback. And there are a lot of unknown variables there, but still, it is some kind of an effort to see if there is some kind of an impact behind any of these things connected to the human consciousness and the idea of a spiritual realm.
Josh, at this point in your career, you have no doubts about the existence of ghosts, correct?
That is correct. I have no doubt that ghosts exist. What those ghosts are is still up for debate. I mean, I think in some cases these ghosts are intelligent, interactive, conscious, disembodied type beings. And in other cases, most of the time, they are simply imprints or recordings in the environment that are played back. Now, I think it is appropriate for us to have this debate about what a ghost is. But I think we should be long past the point of saying that ghosts exist. But the problem is we have tons of video footage out there of these things, tons of pictures, tons of personal experiences, but nobody has done what we are going to do in the Mobius mission this year in order to get the absolute most comprehensive view. And you know what, George? There are still going to be people who don't believe it when we get something, because as you know, there are still people out there who think the earth is flat.
Including Shaquille O'Neal. We're going to come back and take final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Joshua P. Warren with us. He's live in Puerto Rico. And, of course, we will take your calls. How often are you in Puerto Rico, Josh?
Well, you know, at this point, I go back and forth a lot. The last time we talked, I was in Asheville, North Carolina, my hometown. But now, you know, I'm probably here about, I'd say a third or a quarter of the year. And then, of course, I also I get invitations to travel to a lot of other places and do speaking engagements. And so last year I was constantly on the road, it seemed like. And now I've got some invitations to go to China, to go to England. And so I'm kind of waiting to see, honestly, if I want to do that this year or wait till next year, because sometimes it's nice to just stay away from airports for a little while. And, you know, I don't have a private jet. So for now, I think I'm just going to maybe try to this year take it a little easy.
not all bad, huh?
Oh, man. You know, I'm so fortunate, and that's why – you know, when it comes to some of these things that I work on, I often say, look, living proof, and maybe it sounds arrogant and egocentric to say that, but I'm living proof that by studying these techniques, you can accomplish amazing things in your life. And also, you have to realize that people, when you start talking to them about a good fortune and creating good thought forms, they will often jump to, like, I want to be a millionaire. I want to be a billionaire. They'll go straight for the money. And, you know, George, I remember there was an incident that I wrote about in my book, Use the Force, about a guy who won the lottery. I believe he lived in Chicago, and he won hundreds of millions of dollars. And he was very generous, and he gave his friends and family houses and cars and all that kind of stuff. But he had one relative who thought that he wasn't generous enough, and so she and her boyfriend schemed to kidnap him and do kind of a ransom thing, and things went awry, and they ended up killing him. And so you can say that, hey, it's easy to think I know what's good for me, I know what's best for me, but it goes also back to what you were saying, George, about the idea of greed and how that sometimes people think they know what's good for themselves, but they don't really. And so you have to be, you know, to be really particular about what you get and how you, you know, don't take it for granted. And I've had a great life, and I love it when people contact me and say that some of the experiments that I've done have helped them as well.
Super. Let's go back to the calls, Josh. We go to Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hey, Bear, go ahead.
Hello, George. I'm sorry I don't have time to talk to you for a minute. Josh, I've got to talk to you. I'm an hour and a half from you in Rock Hill, South Carolina. If you'll remember, I met you in Asheville at the Diana Wortham Theater along with George and Tommy back on August 27th. You remember that?
I definitely remember you. I'll never forget it, Barry.
Well, listen, the Brown Mountain Lights, I'm Rock Hill in Rock Hill, and I'm a member of the largest and the richest American Legion Lodge in South Carolina. We got a $2 million beautiful brand new building. We've got $3 million in the bank, buddy. And we're going to try to put together a 400 or 500 person visit to Asheville the second week of December, and we want to go to the Biltmore to, you know, to see the Christmas lights. I know you've been there for the Christmas show.
Yes, absolutely.
At the Biltmore.
Oh, yeah, that's, you know, growing up in Asheville, that was always the thing to do at Christmas. It's beautiful.
Oh, man. Hey, George, God knows I wish you could see it, George. They've got 40 Christmas trees in there at least.
Jeez, gorgeous.
I'm 40 feet tall.
I love that.
I mean, the Biltmore is huge. But anyway, I've got your number and your website and everything, and my wife and I are going to be in Asheville on May the 22nd and 23rd, 24th, we're going to go down to the Cherokee Indian Reservation and do a little gambling. As a matter of fact, I'm going to put some garlic in my pocket, win about $2,000, and then we're going to hit the Blue Ridge Parkway and drive all the way up through Virginia Virginia Skyway, the Skyway, you know, the Blue Ridge changes names in Virginia.
And, that's going to be a fantastic trip. And you know, please let me know when you're coming into town, and whether or not I am there, I will arrange to make sure that you and your friends have a free Haunted Asheville ghost tour. Because I wrote a book called Haunted Asheville. It's been about 20 years ago now, which it still is a big number one nonfiction bestseller in the region. And I created a tour called the Haunted Asheville Ghost Tour. We're very lucky, very fortunate. We've got wonderful guides. We won a TripAdvisor Certificate of Excellence. And Just the other day, National Geographic Traveler magazine called it one of the best outdoor adventures. They said it was mesmerizing and magical. So when you come into town, I'll arrange for you to go on the Haunted Asheville Ghost Tour, and that includes the Mystery Museum and all that kind of stuff. And I guess one thing that I can definitely tell everybody listening, George, is that you blew my mind, because your schedule, George, is so hectic. I mean, I don't know when you sleep. You came into Asheville, you did the event, and you were so busy, you had to zip right back out again. But hopefully next time you come to Asheville, you can work
spend
in
some
at
time
least
there.
A couple days.
Yeah, that would be nice. It's a gorgeous town. It really is. And the people are fantastic.
Oh, man, everybody was so excited to see you and Tom. And, I mean, it was just, you know, I still get emails about that event. I was talking to Tom about it earlier, and everybody just thought it was wonderful. So we were looking forward to your next visit to Asheville.
We should do that show again.
I think so. And, you know, Asheville is a place that, you know, it's not like a major hub. So, I mean, you get a lot of...
But people were coming from everywhere.
They came from all over this part of the U.S. I mean, we had people coming from, like, all the way from Chicago, all the way from southern Florida. People came from all over the eastern seaboard for that Asheville event, and it was absolutely amazing, and everybody just had the most fantastic time. But, you know, you have a lot of fans in the Asheville area.
We sure do. What has been for you in your research the scariest moment you've ever had?
I think that for me, the scariest moment was when I was spending a night all by myself in the most haunted room of what many consider the most haunted mansion in all of America. And not only was I by myself in the room, the entire building was empty as well. And I'm talking about Myrtle's Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana. Now, that place operates as kind of a bed and breakfast. So most of the time, if somebody goes there and checks in as a regular guest, you're going to have other staff members there. But I had special circumstances. And that's because that I had a TV production crew that had reserved the whole place to shoot for a couple of days, and I ended up getting into town early. So I had a whole day and night completely to myself in this building. And at that point in my life, George, you know, we've talked about this before, I still was not convinced that ghosts were not simply some kind of recording or impression. At that point, I knew that you know, people would see these things, but I wasn't convinced that they were intelligent and aware and cognizant. Well, that night changed my life. I mean, that was a life-altering experience. I was staying in the General David Bradford suite, and recently, my good friend Tim Beckley, whom you know very well,
yeah,
George.
Good guest.
Yeah, great guy. He had a book that came out on this. It was a book about poltergeists, and he included an article that I wrote about this in his book. And essentially, in the middle of the night, something started pounding on the walls, and it was responding to my requests for it to knock on the walls. And I videotaped this. I mean, it was one thing to hear something pound on the wall. It was another thing for me to say, can you do that again? And then boom, boom, boom. Okay, can you do that again? Boom, boom, boom. When I reached that point where I realized that I was communicating with a disembodied spirit that was in that room, there was an immediate fight or flight instinct that kicked in. And to be honest with you, what I really wanted to do was turn around and get the heck out of there.
Fast.
Yeah. And I knew that there was probably nothing physically to be afraid of. But when you're by yourself in a remote area like that, and it was storming like crazy outside, and the whole house was empty, and there's this thing that is knocking on the walls and the desks and the different parts of the room, when I tell it or ask it to do so, there is something so chilling about facing this that, and again, it shouldn't be scary, but it goes back to that basic fear of the unknown, of just like not knowing what is there. And I thought to myself, if I go to bed in here tonight and I wake up and there is a ghost standing next to the bed, I'm out of here. You know, I will go sleep.
There you go.
Car.
Let's go to Larice in Fort Worth, Texas, on the wild card line. Hi there.
Hi. Josh, what do you think about the feasibility of using a sigil in a physical mediumship development circle?
Well, you know, Larice, I think that any time you have a sigil that you can use, it's a good thing, especially when you're trying to do something of an energetic nature, such as mediumship. And you know, as I told George earlier, I've been doing this particular method now for, I guess, a little over a month. And just to clarify for folks, what I am doing is I am taking different messages and intentions. I am recording them through an audio recorder. I am interweaving them with audio tones. I am playing them underneath a basin of water. And then I am videotaping it as I shine regular and then ultraviolet and then UV light, or excuse me, and then infrared light on that water. And then taking the patterns that I get and turning those into sigils. Now, so far, I've created four of these. One is to manifest ghosts in a very general way. One is to increase psychic activity. CoastToCoastAM.com has both of those posted. If you go to JoshuaPWarren.com, I also have extra ones. One, if you want to increase a flow of money, or another one if you want to enhance relationships. Now, anybody, however, out there can watch the video that is also posted at CoastToCoastAM.com, see the basic technique, and reproduce this with very specific intentions. Now, frankly, as I go forth in my research, if there's somebody listening out there who wants me to create a specific sigil for them, I will consider doing that for free, okay? I'm not going to charge anything for it because I'm only interested in your feedback. So, Larice, if you are doing this type of, you know, medium circle and you have a specific interest in mind, email me and I'll see if I can create something for you as well. But for now, you know, I'm looking to see the feedback I get from people who go to CoastToCoastAM.com and JoshuaPWarren.com and use the ones that are there.
Let us go to James in Barstow, California. James, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, James. Thank you.
All right. Here's the deal. I've been living in my apartment for 18 years now, and about 4 years ago, they painted it and painted the doors a dark color. And I sit out a lot, day, night, all night, evenings. And a couple years ago, this face appeared on my front door. I've looked at this door like 10 million times. And you could see her forehead, her eyes, her nose, her chin, and some of her hair. She's Oriental. And in the couple of years that have followed, her hair has grown. You can see her neck and part of her shoulders. And I showed this to a couple of my neighbors who thought I was totally whacked out, and they saw it. And I was wondering what you think about that. And secondly, I'll try to make it short. I'm an extrovert to the extreme degree. And I know what they say, that opposites attract. And I've been dealing with this lady as of even yesterday. I had to threaten her with police action.
Oh, jeez.
Stop bothering me. So why is it that since I have so much positive that I attract this negative and it zaps the tar out of me? Somebody with that much negativity, I don't understand it.
Couple minutes to go, Josh. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, first off, let's deal with the face appearing on the door, because I've had a similar experience.
That happens.
I had something very, very similar happen to me. I have an online paranormal investigation course that people can take on my website. And one of the things that I talk about right up front is pareidolia, which is this idea of seeing chaos and turning it into order, like seeing the man in the moon or seeing animals and clouds. So I understand that. That said, I had a very, very weird dream experience one night, and I woke up the next morning and I had this big weird red stain on my door, and to this day I've never been able to explain what it is. It's not blood, but I don't know what it is. So maybe those two are connected, maybe they're not, but I definitely think that sometimes we know, again, that physical matter is affected by energy molds, and something that happens to you can literally be expressed and create basically its own kind of organic sigil, is what that boils down to. As far as this lady that you're dealing with, you know, when it comes to relationships, opposites don't attract. Like is supposed to attract like, so to speak. Or in other words, like if you have an interest, somebody that has the same interest should be attracted to you. But ultimately, the thing is, you're always going to have individuals out there who are going to contrast. The stronger you are in one area, the more they're going to contrast in another area. And you just have to realize that you can overcome that, but you're going to have people who are going to naturally be enhanced in their behavior because they are responding to something in you that is so different from themselves.
All right, Josh, I want to thank you again for being on the program. You take care of yourself. We'll be back in a moment with open lines, including Fright Night. Scare us.